It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
And welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And all of our past shows, recaps, podcasts are housed there at the website as well. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com. All this week, we have very special guests for each of these shows. Today, we'll be talking with Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a West Point graduate, and a former Army Ranger. And this is a show, it's important speeches and documents of America's founding. It's brought to you by the Harris family. And we will be talking about some of President Lincoln's speeches in this show. Now, as we look at all the issues day to day on the Kim Munson Show, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And if something is a good idea, you should not have to use force to implement it. And speaking of force and all kinds of things that are going on in our country right now, I know many of us are concerned about the possibility that the Dominion voting systems have been manipulated and are not secure. My understanding is that in Colorado, all of the counties use Dominion except for Douglas and Garfield counties. And a listener reached out and asked that I announce that each of us reach out to our state legislators, our Colorado Secretary of State, and our county commissioners to ask that question. Has our votes been manipulated by Dominion, and is our voting systems secure? And the way that you can reach out to our state legislators is you can use the search engine DuckDuckGo. I'm moving away from Google. And you can just put in Colorado State Legislators, and that should get you to that link. You can, again, DuckDuckGo, the Colorado Secretary of State, and that will give you the contact information. And then you can actually then search for each individual county and just put in and county clerk and recorder, and that should bring that up. Our quote for today is from Abraham Lincoln. We will be talking about Lincoln in the second, third, and fourth segments. And you know, he was an American statesman and lawyer who served as the 16th president of the United States from 1861 to 1865. He led our nation through the Civil War, which was a tremendous moral, constitutional, and political crisis. And I would submit to you that we are in a moral, constitutional, and political crisis right now in America. As well, this quote comes from a letter that Lincoln had sent to Colonel William Elkins November 21st, 1864. Producer Steve, are you ready?
Go ahead.
Okay. I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. Corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. I would submit to you, Producer Steve, that we are in a situation that he just described in that particular quote.
1864. Okay. 1864. Like you just said, the Civil War was still raging. And there he is trying to deal with that. But at the same time, those words right there tell us that there were other things going on that were splitting the country in other ways as well, in terms of the financial piece of the way the country worked. And I can't imagine what those days must have been like, and to be president of it all.
Well, and just a tremendous leader to bring us through all of this. And when he says corporations have been enthroned, can you say mainstream media and what they have done?
Enthroned.
Corruption.
Enthroned is an excellent word.
Yeah, he was great with words. And corruption in high places will follow. Can we not take a look at what happened regarding these affidavits about voter fraud. We have been in a difficult situation before, my friends, and I do believe that the divine provider has had his, we know he's had his hand on America since our founding, and I don't think that he's going to abandon us yet, but we need to make sure that we get our priorities in order, Producer Steve.
Well stated, yes. This is a good week to reflect on things like that.
Most definitely. And this show is brought to you because I have some great sponsors. And on the line with me is Jen Hewlin. She is an entrepreneur. She is the owner of Water's Edge Winery. It is a great winery located right here in Centennial, Colorado. You can find it. It's just west of University on the north side of Arapaho over by South Glen. And Jen Hewlin is a great valued partner of the Kim Munson Show. Jen, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Good morning, Kim.
And do you have big plans for Thanksgiving?
Oh, yes. Well, we are getting together with some friends here at the house. I believe the Vintner has made us some wonderful wine. So, of course, that will be flowing. And we're going to smoke a turkey this year. How about you guys?
We're going to be getting together as well. I think we're going to have a smoked turkey and also a regular turkey. And so it'll be great.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's this is whacking me out a little bit about limits on people and having people get together. It's just kind of a really crazy time right now, Jen Hewlin.
Yeah, well, I guess you can look at it a couple different ways. I look at it as guidelines. As we've seen in the news, the people making these proclamations that we need to not get together with people from other households or in large groups are exactly people who are getting together in large groups and with people in other households. So, you know, I take it as guidelines, like they're trying to tell us what to do, but, you know, I'm not the kind of girl that likes to be told what to do. So I'm going to live free and make choices for myself and my family based on what I believe is best for our health this year.
Those responsible.
And that is one, right, exactly. That's one thing I am grateful for as we're heading into the Thanksgiving week, you know, that I have the freedom to make those decisions for myself. So I appreciate the guidelines. Thank you very much, government, but you're not in charge of my health. Thank you.
So what are some of the things that you're grateful for as you look back over the year? It's been quite a year, Jen Hewlin.
You know, it has been. And one thing that we were just talking about amongst all of the pain and angst and agony and anger, we've got crazy. I think they announced that aliens existed back sometime in July. I don't think anybody even noticed because everybody was so worried about the pandemic.
I wonder if aliens can get COVID.
I don't know. That's a good question. I guess we might find out.
We might find out.
This COVID going anywhere. Yeah. You know, what I'm grateful for most, and I think one thing that has come out of COVID is people are spending a lot more time with people they love because we don't have all of those things that distract us, movie theaters and going out to, you know, just randomly going to a store. So we're sitting down, we're playing games with one another, we're reconnecting with our families, and I think we're going to see some really good stuff come out of this. People are less reliant on external things to keep them happy. They're finding happiness from inside, and I think that's important.
It has been good. I've noticed even in my neighborhood that I think people used to be out doing all kinds of after-school activities with their kids. I actually am seeing families walking around. I think that there are many silver linings to this whole COVID-19 thing, but one of the things that is not a silver lining is this whole government control thing, and I'm a bit concerned about the narrative. As you mentioned, many of those that are pushing out the narrative are not following that narrative, which makes me wonder if the narrative is true. We'll see. They say that we're going to be in a big surge here 2 weeks from now. We'll certainly find out. But the Saturday after Thanksgiving is Small Business Saturday. We are encouraging people to support our small businesses. Water's Edge Winery is one of those businesses. Do you have anything special going on for Small Business Saturday?
Well, we always have special things going on, but this week, before your Thanksgiving dinner, we do have one wine I want to tell you about. It's called Blanco Roja, which is a white cranberry Pinot Gris. It is literally the best wine if you are, it's light, so it's served cold and sits at about the same amount of alcohol as a beer, so around 6.5%. And the best thing about it is if you want that early morning glass of wine, I know it's Thanksgiving dinner. Sometimes people are up, a lot of us moms, at, 5 o'clock in the morning to put the turkey on. And sometimes you just want a little glass of something while you're cooking. It's the perfect breakfast wine. So we are doing a special this week. If you buy two bottles, the third one is half off. And the bottles run $18 a piece. So they're wonderful. You should have a couple of those on hand. But we're going to start into our December soon here. And every December, we do this really fun thing called No Peaking Blue Envelope. And when you come into the winery and spend a certain amount of money, you get to pull an envelope from a bag. You keep that envelope unopened when you bring it back in January. And inside of that envelope is free wine, free chocolate, free food, discounts, buy one, get one. And the best part, the grand prize, is you get a half batch of wine. So that's 15 bottles free that you have the experience of bottling yourself and putting a personalized label on. And it's really fun, and it's something I'm looking forward to again this year. We've done it the last couple of years.
Well, it sounds like a festive time over at Water's Edge Winery for sure. How can people get more information, Jen?
Well, you can follow us on Facebook, on Instagram. We're Water's Edge Winery Denver, Centennial, Water's Edge Winery and Bistro, actually. I keep forgetting to add. We've been a bistro for 2 years
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
Chef D is making some wonderful food right now. We've got baked ziti, and his homemade broccoli cheddar soup is the stuff of legends. You're going to want to take some home. And I don't know if a lot of people know that we do this, but we do curbside dough. We can do take and bake. So all of those famous flatbreads that you love from the winery, we can send you home with instructions. And it's very simple. It's about 10 minutes at 450. But you can have that fresh and hot at your house. So as we're heading into the holiday season, if you don't feel like going out for the night and you want to have food at home, give us a call. We can send you home with some fabulous food and, of course, a couple of bottles of wine to go with it. So wewdenver.com is the website, Facebook, Instagram. And we're moving over to MeWe on a personal level, and I'm thinking about taking my business page with me over there. We're just not quite there yet, but keep an eye out for us.
Okay. Jen Hewlin, thank you so much, and wishing you and yours a very blessed Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Kim. You and Steve as well.
And before we go to break, I want to give a shout out to Hooters Restaurants. They are a great partner of the Kim Munson Show. They have 5 locations, Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. And during this kind of crazy, unique time we have going on right now, they have all kinds of specials. They have to-go specials. They have great curbside service. And Wednesdays are Wings Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. We're going to see how that's going to transpire with all of these different things going on regarding our small businesses. But go to HootersColorado.com for more information. That's HootersColorado.com, and we will be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west?
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com also. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Ben Martin. You know him. He's a patriotic historian. He's a West Point graduate and a former Army Ranger. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. And just fascinating conversations as we look at the important documents and speeches of our founding. And right now, Ben Martin, we're talking about Lincoln. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Kim. I'm happy to be here today. I'm all fired up about Lincoln. And I wanted to start, before we really get into the meat of the program, to talk about, since we're this is Thanksgiving, I want to talk about our National Day of Thanksgiving. And the father of our country and our first president under the Constitution, during his first year as president, called for a National Day of Public Thanksgiving and Prayer on the 26th of November.
Wow.
Just like this Thanksgiving's going to be. President Washington said, and this is really important, this day is to be devoted to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all good that was, that is, or that will be. And so he started this National Thanksgiving recognition this day. But it included prayer and Thanksgiving. And then reflecting upon Washington's sentiments, and you know, our number one guy we're talking about today is our President Lincoln. He followed Washington in a lot of things, in his speeches and the way he conducted himself. He had always modeled himself after Washington. So in reflecting upon Washington's sentiments and the American religious practice, the father of our second founding, our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, established in November 1864, during the real hot times of the Civil War, the Thanksgiving holiday, which we continue to celebrate in November to these words, to this day. And he used these words, "Now therefore I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, do hereby appoint and set apart the last Thursday in November next as a day which I desire to be observed by all my fellow citizens, wherever they may be, as a day of thanksgiving and praise to Almighty God, the beneficent creator and ruler of the universe." Do you see how those their statements parallel each other?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
It's just amazing. So we were talking about that. And the distinction I want to make is that in President Washington's times, they did not use the words God or too often, you know, because they thought it was disrespectful. And you can see how the language has changed a little bit. And President Lincoln does use God freely in his speeches and his talks. So anyway, I just thought it was great that we would talk about that today, being Thanksgiving, that these two great presidents of ours both were tied to that the giving of thanksgiving and praise to the Father.
And if you're giving Thanksgiving, Ben Martin, you can't be envious. You are grateful for what you have, and then also praising the divine provider, and they referred to him, as you mentioned, in several different ways, but the divine provider who provides all of this to us and certainly keeps our attitudes in the right spot. Let's go ahead and jump into Lincoln. You said this is going to be Lincoln number one.
President Lincoln number one.
Oh, President Lincoln number one.
Lincoln. Lincoln is the citizen and the aspirant to be senator. But you know what Lincoln was really doing in all of this? It wasn't so much that he wanted to have power for himself, for his aggrandizement. He came back into politics because he saw what was happening in our nation at the time. It's just like right now. It's against the foundational principles of our country. And he saw that was happening with the slavery issue and trying to spread slavery into the territories.
And
that's why he came back. And that's what he's looking to do right now.
And yes. Ben, you just mentioned parallels. Lincoln saw a problem, and he finally said, "I have to step forward and serve." And I see a parallel to President Trump, where President Trump has been so concerned about many of these issues that he finally stepped forward and ran for president. I think there's some real parallels there.
There is really great parallels. And there were a lot of people, just like I'm sure with President Trump, we don't know them all, but just like with Lincoln, he had a great, successful law career going on with himself, and he was enjoying the heck out of that. You know, he got to talk to people and stuff like that. He had a comfortable life. He was enjoying it. He loved Springfield, but he came out of all of that stuff. He came out of that to go back and run for an elective office so that he could have a say in what would happen to the future of our country. So, I mean, there's great parallels here. And like we talked about in the last time, we talked about Lincoln when he was campaigning, you know, and he came back into politics. And this is him. And so he's beginning. So we begin this part of Lincoln's this life with a summary of the highlights in the series of political campaign speeches that he makes after the Lincoln-Douglas debates and losing that Senate race. He starts making these in 1859 in the states of the American Midwest, which leads to February 1860 in his Cooper Union address, known as the speech that made Abraham Lincoln president. So sometime after winning that 1860 speech, also the election, he summarizes his thoughts on what makes America great and puts them on a paper to himself entitled Fragments of the Constitution and the Union. And in February of 1861, he then travels from Springfield, Illinois to Washington, D.C., and on 22 February, he finds himself in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at Independence Hall on the 129th anniversary of George Washington's birthday. There he makes some short but poignant remarks which seem to flow from the fragments he wrote on the Constitution and the Union. And then finally, he makes his way to the national capital and delivers his first inaugural address on 4 March 1861. We will focus on the highlights of that amazing speech, too, which will set his plan for his first term as president. So that's what we're going to be talking about here now, Kim.
Okay.
So if we can do, we'll just run.
Let's start with
the
Cooper Union address. Yes, let's do that.
Okay, well, we don't want to talk about his Midwest campaign.
Oh, did you? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think we're going to jump in there. No, tell us about the Midwest campaign.
Well, we'll talk about it really quickly. Lincoln's 1859 Midwest campaign for the presidency. Mr. Lincoln's speech-making in the American Midwest continued to have a great political effect during the post-1858 period inside and outside of his home state of Illinois. In March 59, Mr. Lincoln makes several campaign speeches on the slavery theme in Illinois and nearby Midwestern states. In essence, his theme was, I do not wish to be misunderstood on this subject of slavery in this country. I suppose it may long exist, and perhaps that is the best way for it to come to an end, peaceably. It is for it to exist for a length of time, but I say that the spread and strengthening and perpetuation of it is an entirely different proposition. There, we should in every way resist it as a wrong, treating it as a wrong. And that's the essence of those speeches that he first makes in March. And he makes several of them there in the Midwestern states. In April, Mr. Lincoln concludes in several letters to several Boston Republican committees there that this is a world of compensation, and he who would be no slave must consent to have no slaves. Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves, and under a just God cannot long retain it. So he's saying, you know, if you want to be free, you can't have slaves.
And he's absolutely right on that, Ben Martin. I mean, this is such a foundational principle. Ben, let's go to break. And when we come back, let's continue. This is President Lincoln number one. Ben Martin is on the line with me. He's an expert on Lincoln. This show is brought to you by the Harris family, and we'll be right back. Hey, Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. You always have such great nuggets of wisdom. You know, and it's important to prepare, and failure to prepare, you prepare to fail. But one of the most interesting quotes that you recently came up with was one by Warren Buffett.
That's right. All my nuggets of wisdom are not my own. In fact, most of them are learned from smarter people than me. The great part about that is I have so many people to choose from.
Isn't that great?
That's right. That's right. But this one from Warren Buffett, he said, it wasn't raining when Noah built the ark. And I think that one is really self-explanatory. You know, when it comes to investing, it's very tough to react without getting emotional when things start to go wrong. If you haven't kind of prepared your entire setup or portfolio for a rainy day in advance. So I think it's very smart to diversify, and that means true diversification, with some things that are very safe, some that may be a little bit more risky, rather than just having a whole bunch of things that can all go down when the market goes down.
Well, and one of the great things about it is you can actually give people another set of eyes on a nest egg so that you can make sure that you can, I mean, each individual is different. And so as they prepare for their rainy day, they need to look at their individual needs and kind of their comfort level as well.
Well, I think that's very true. And what I believe, Kim, is it's very hard to control your emotions. Anything we can do to take away that stimulus that may create a negative emotion where you may make a bad decision, I think it's much easier to do that than to try to deal with that emotion when it comes up and make it go away, because you can't. It's impossible.
Well, that seems like that makes sense. So if people like more information with Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, and I know that you would be happy to help people with that.
You betcha. Just give us a call, 303-694-1600. Thanks, Kim.
Okay, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
This is my country, land of my birth.
And welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. It is Thanksgiving week, so we have some very special things planned for you today. Right now, we're talking with Ben Martin. You know him. He is a patriotic historian, West Point graduate, and former Army Ranger. A show is brought to you by the Harris family, which we greatly appreciate them underwriting these important shows. And we're talking about the important speeches and documents of the American founding. And we're talking about President Lincoln. And so you said that during break that you wanted to finish up just these thoughts regarding his Midwest campaign. What is that, Ben Martin?
Sure. I just wanted to wrap it up and say that he had many speeches in 1859 all over the Southwest. And what this did was they didn't have TV there and they didn't have radio. All that they could see is speeches that were circulated in the papers. And Lincoln did a very good job of always writing down his speeches so he could give them in the exact form that he said them to the reporters so that they could bring them back. So he kind of helped them out, too. So he had copies of his speeches when he made these so they could report them in the papers. And he was gaining quite a reputation. He spoke often, and most of the time it was about the slavery, and not just slavery, but the extension of slavery into the territories, mm-hmm. and that's what he didn't like.
Just a question: did he memorize these speeches, or did he? How did he deliver them?
He had some notes most of the time in his head, but you know he would deliver many times the same speech. You know he would change it a little bit just by that, but he had his notes and then he would speak from those notes. And most of the time, those notes were in his hat, you know, and he would pull them out. But he could add his own little personal spin to the audience. You know, he was really good at connecting with the audience and seeing what was making them happy, what was blowing their hair back today. And so he would go to that. So his speeches weren't always exactly the same in each one, and they would change a little bit. And so maybe the writing that he gave to them, the speech writing, pieces of paper that he gave to them weren't necessarily exactly what he said, but the essence was there.
Got it. Okay.
That's what it was. So he finishes that, and then because of that, he has gotten recognition where he really needs it, and he hasn't had any, and that's on the East Coast, and it's really in New York City, where all of the most influential people are. And so they have a list during this time that has the people that they think are most eligible to be president. There is one list that's nationally circulated, but it comes from New York City, and it talks about the 25 most people with the most potential to be president. And then there's another list that has a title almost the same, and it's 34 people. So on both of those lists, Lincoln doesn't make it, but because of his speech writing and the influence he'd had in the Midwest, now this is like a command performance. They are asking him to come to Cooper Union in New York City to address this group of New York City's leading political and philanthropic leaders, who would be the most important determinants in judging Lincoln's fitness as a considered presidential candidate. See, he's going there for them to see, we've heard all about him, but does he really have the stuff? Can he really perform in front of a big-time crowd? So the Cooper Union is a brand-new convention center, and when he goes there on 27 February 1860, there's a crowd of approximately 1,500 in there. And at this time, Lincoln, as I said, is not known nationally, although media accounts of his speeches have gotten him noticed there. And so still few Americans living outside of the boundaries of the Midwest, in Illinois especially, have ever witnessed him in person. So this was his big test for him, and a great opportunity to prove if he was capable of being a worthy and serious contender for president. And Lincoln was fully aware of the importance of this speech to his political career. But again, as I said, it wasn't necessarily his political career, but more importantly to the impact he may have in putting slavery upon the path of ultimate extinction, mm-hmm. the way the founders wanted to. So he prepared accordingly. He did research extensively and composed that speech very carefully. And most of that research was conducted in the libraries of the old Illinois State Capitol building, which has been rebuilt exactly in the same style of the way it existed during Lincoln's time there. And I highly recommend a visit there. You can sit in the same offices, reconstructed, but in the same exact place where Lincoln studied and put together many of his speeches, but this one especially. So the speech is consisted of three parts. The first part in that part is this part was Lincoln's use to refute the arguments that Senator Douglas had repeatedly asserted in an effort to promote his popular sovereignty proposition in attempting to become the next U.S. president. Douglas' argument is that our founding fathers who framed the Constitution believed that the Constitution and the divisions of local and from federal authority prohibits the federal government from controlling slavery in the federal territories, and that that's what the founding fathers wanted. So to refute Lincoln's assertions, to refute Douglas's assertions, I'm sorry, Lincoln extensively studied the decisions the 39 signers of the Constitution made on questions of slavery during their political careers. He used the results of his studies to show repeated recorded examples in which 21 of the 39 signers, including George Washington, made decisions that refuted Douglass's assertions.
Hey, question on that. Is there a way everyday people can find that? I think that that would be really important to read.
Yeah, well, read his speech. I mean, this speech, you can find it online. There's a book called that, and it's by Holzer, and it's just a great book, the Lincoln at Cooper Union.
Okay.
And you can see all those examples there, and that's in the first part of the speech. And Lincoln made decisions. He talks about how all those founders made those decisions. And with that, he said, okay, of that, 29 of the 39 signers, including George Washington, made those decisions, and they're all recorded. And he also shows where other signers who did not participate in recorded political decisions after the Constitutional Convention were known to be anti-slavery men, framers such as Ben Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, and Gouverneur Morris. So that was what part one was, to just refute, debase Stephen Douglas's arguments that the founders really thought that the Constitution allowed for slavery to be extended into the territories. And so, you know, that was the first part. The second part in this, Mr. Lincoln emotionally addresses the people of the South, accordingly using the pronoun you to refer to them while using the pronoun we when referring to the Republican Party. By contrast, the Democrats had begun to pejoratively use the term black Republicans in reference to all Republicans. So some key excerpts from this part of the speech are, this is Lincoln now talking, and he's addressing this part of his speech to Southerners and Southern Democrats. You consider yourself, it sort of sounds like a Lauren Daigle song almost. You consider yourself a reasonable and a just people, and I consider that in the general qualities of reason and justice, you are not inferior to any other people. Still, when you speak of us Republicans, you do so only to denounce us as reptiles. Does this sort of sound like what's happening today?
A little bit.
Or at best, as no better than outlaws. He says, you will grant a hearing to pirates or murderers, but nothing like it to, quote, unquote, black Republicans. You say you are conservative. We are the conservatives. You want to maintain things. We want to maintain things as they were. You advocate new and untried ideas. You say you will break up the Union rather than be denied your constitutional right. You were talking about your right to take slavery to the federal territories. No such right exists or ever existed. You say you will destroy the government if a Republican is elected president.
Sounds familiar?
Yeah, and you say it will be our fault if you do that. Your purpose, then, plainly stated, is that you will destroy the government unless you be allowed to construe and enforce the Constitution as you please, on all points in dispute between you and us. You will rule or ruin in all events. Pretty strong argument. And he says that. And then in part three, in this part, Lincoln talks to Republicans. He urges calm and asks them to listen and respond to reasonable demands. This sound familiar?
Absolutely. We've been here before.
Yeah, he explains. That's what I'm saying, the crisis. He explains why appeasement will not work with Democrats, because the South will always want more. He concludes his speech with a strong and famous passage. And this is what Lincoln says. Lincoln here is denouncing Stephen's policy of popular sovereignty. Wrong as we think slavery is, we can yet afford to let it alone where it is, because that much is due to the necessity arising from its actual presence in the nation. But can we, while our votes will prevent it, allow it to spread into the national territories? if our sense of duty forbids this, then let us stand by our duty fearlessly and effectively. Let us be diverted by none of those sophistical contrivances, such as groping for some middle ground between the right and the wrong, vain, such as a policy of don't care on the question about which all men do care, such as invocations to Washington, imploring men to unsay what Washington said and undo what he did. Neither, and this is a very famous passage, neither let us be slandered from our duty by false accusations against us, nor frightened from it by menaces of destruction to the government, nor of dungeons to ourselves. Let us have faith that right makes might, and in that faith, let us to the end dare to do our duty as we understand it. And that's how he concludes that speech.
Wow. Ben Martin, we're going to go to break. That is okay. So powerful. Before we do that, though, I want to acknowledge one of my great sponsors, Castlegate Knife and Tool. It's a family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. Now that we're getting into Christmas time, shopping for our loved ones, a knife is a great gift for that hard-to-buy for person. So, Saturday is Small Business Saturday, and they're going to have some in-store specials at Castlegate Knife and Tool, or their brand new website is up and running. You can find that at castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We're going to go to break, and we'll have our final segment with Ben Martin. Stay tuned.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
I pledge thee my allegiance, America.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you out there. Hope that you have a blessed Thanksgiving. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. On the line with me is Ben Martin. You know him. He's a patriotic historian, West Point graduate, a former Army Ranger, and we're talking about Lincoln as president. This show is brought to you by the Harris family, as we're learning about important speeches and documents of our American founding. So, Ben, we went to break. I think you said there was just a little something you wanted to finish up about that Cooper's Union address from February 27, 1860.
Yeah, Kim, I just want to... Harold Holzer wrote a whole book about his address at Cooper Union and about how important it is. The subtitle of the book is The Speech That Made Lincoln President. It's that important, and most people have never heard of it before. So I just want to wrap up his conclusion, the author, Harold Holson, when he says, had Lincoln failed at this do-or-die debut in New York, he would never have won his party's presidential nomination 3 months later, not to mention the election to the White House. Moreover, had Lincoln failed in New York, few might recognize today the nation he went on to defend and rededicate. Without Lincoln at the helm, the U.S. might be remembered today as a failed experiment that fractured into a North American Balkans.
Wow.
So it was just a great, this was so important. So then Lincoln, now he is the president. He has been elected president in 1860, and he's getting ready to go to his inaugural address, leaving Illinois, leaving Springfield, and headed to Washington, D.C., for his inaugural address in March of 1861. So he stops. The last stop that he makes on this 12-day train trip is at Independence Hall in Philadelphia. And what he says there is really important, and it underlies what he said in the speech that he made to himself, or the writing that he made to himself, called Fragments of the Constitution and the Union. And he says, you know, when he looks at that, and they ask him to make some remarks in Independence Hall in the last stop, and it's the 22nd of February, 1861, the 229th anniversary of George Washington's birthday. There, Lincoln helps to raise a giant American flag with a new 34th star, the one for the free state of Kansas.
Yay. I wanted to go back. What anniversary of Washington's birthday was that? What year was it?
229.
229 years since Washington's birthday.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Okay.
Pretty cool, huh? So he makes a tribute to Washington there, too. And then he says, he makes a speech, and he says, Lincoln spoke in our great temple of our founding heritage, words that form the foundation of his popular belief. I am filled with deep emotion at finding myself standing here in the place where collected together the wisdom, the patriotism, the devotion to principle from which sprang the institutions under which we live today. I have never had a feeling politically that did not spring from the sentiments embodied in the Declaration of Independence. And that, you know, that just kind of sums it up for Lincoln. And he said, Lincoln asked those assembled, and this is really a great question that he says after he gives this those remarks. He says, Lincoln asked the assembled that were there, if this country could be saved on the principle of equality for all people. He said, and this is really poignant, if it can, I will consider myself one of the happiest men in the world if I can help to save it. If it can't be saved upon that principle, it will be truly awful. But if this country cannot be saved without giving up that principle, I would rather be assassinated on this spot than to surrender. So, pretty strong words from him.
And that was at Independence Hall.
That was at Independence Hall on the 229th birthday of President Washington. And we can hear the echoes from Lincoln's fragments on the Constitution and Union in his remarks at Independence Hall and in his Gettysburg Address, maybe in all of his words and actions. We can hear a little of that. So then Lincoln goes on to Washington, D.C. for his first inaugural address in 4 March, 1861. After Lincoln was elected as 16th president of the nation, but before he had been inaugurated, 7 southern states had seceded from the Union and formed the Confederate States of America. Indeed, the new flag of the Confederacy, the Stars and Bars, had been adopted and raised over Montgomery, Alabama, on the same day of his first inaugural address. Lincoln primarily directed his inaugural remarks to them of the South and the Democrats of the South and the Southern states, contemplating those that would follow the lead of those 7 states that had seceded. He says, my fellow countrymen, and these are excerpts, but I think they're poignant ones, and he says, my fellow Americans, apprehension seems to exist among the people of the Southern states that their property and their peace and their personal security are to be endangered. I have no purpose to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I believe I have no lawful right to do so. I shall take care that the laws, all the laws, be faithfully executed in all the states. In doing this, there needs to be no bloodshed or violence.
So, Ben, question. We think of Lincoln as freeing the slaves, but here he's saying that he has no jurisdiction over those states regarding slavery. Why was that?
He says because the Constitution doesn't allow him to do that. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows him to do it in normal times. He, as you know, he will use the powers in the war clauses to write and execute the Emancipation Proclamation, which will free the slaves in all of the states that are fighting against the Union right now. So he says that in Lincoln, you will see, and I have seen over all the times that I've studied him, that he is moderate. He takes steps slowly. He doesn't go right away and try to trash everything and try to convert everything, but he looks for his opportunities where he can do it without violating the Constitution. And that is really important to Lincoln. He believes, like he said last month when we talked about that speech at the Lyceum, where he says, you know, to be a patriot, you have to obey the laws of a country under our Constitution. So in this section, he says, one section believes slavery is right and ought to be extended. The other believes it is wrong and ought not. That is our only substantial dispute. And then he says, my countrymen, again, one and all, think calmly and well upon this whole subject. Nothing valuable can be lost by taking time. And he says, in your hands, my dissatisfied fellow countrymen, and not in mine, is the momentous issue of civil war. This government will not assail you. You can have no conflict without being yourself the aggressor. You have no oath registered in heaven to destroy the government, while I shall have the most solemn one to preserve, protect, and defend it. And then he closes by saying, I am loath to close. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passions may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. The mystic cords of memory, stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave to every living heart and heartstone all over this broad land, will yet swell the chorus of union when again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature. And that's how he concludes his first inaugural address.
Ben, we've got maybe just about 3 minutes left. As you're talking about this, yeah, I see parallels to what is happening in America today.
Yes, I do too. And I'm glad you do. I knew you would. And I hope our listeners out there see it too, that we have been through a greater crisis than we are right now. But we can make it through there. But we have to stay strong. Just like he said, we have to stand by our principles. We have to stand and unbelieve that right makes might. And it's so important. And when he talks about our political foundations, our principles, and he says, you know, that's what he's talking about here, and that's what he said in his speech that he wrote to himself, these fragments on the Union and the Constitution. And he starts that out by saying, all this is not the result of accident. It has a philosophical cause. Without the Constitution and the Union, we could not have attained these great results. But even these are not the primary cause of our great prosperity. There is something back of these, entwining itself more closely about the human heart. That something is the principle of liberty to all. And that is so important, and you see that reflected all of the time that he says, I have never had a political thought that did not spring from the sentiments expressed in the Declaration of Independence.
In this last couple of minutes, and you and I, Ben, we've had so many different conversations. But going back to this vision of the Declaration, that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Calvin Coolidge said, if all men are created equal, then that is final. This idea in America now to put people into different groups and raise one group up over another to tear another down is so antithetical to the vision of the Declaration. And that is why, And that's why we do this show, is so that people can understand that idea. And the fact that people want to tear down that beautiful idea because we've not perfected it is antithetical to what we're trying to do. Instead of tearing it down, we need to aspire to that every day.
And that's what he did, because he knew that the people, you know, like he did it in his Lyceum speech, he knew that people were becoming lawless, anarchy. They were creating violent things on people that they did not like or they did not agree with. And he said, that's got to stop. And he goes back. He goes from the Constitution to the principles upon which the Constitution was founded. And that's our primary principles of our Declaration of Independence for this nation. And he talks about that all the time, and he really means it, because he says it all the time. He says it in all of his famous speeches that we know of today. And that's the thing that he ends that speech in Cooper Union, and he said, let us have faith that right makes might. And in that faith, let us to the end dare to do our duty as we understand it.
And with that, Ben Martin, I think we can stop right there. As we're taking time during this Thanksgiving week, I would recommend that people read the Declaration of Independence, sit down and read the Constitution, talk with your family about it. Ben Martin, these shows are so rich. I'm so grateful to the Harris family for bringing this to you, and for you,
too.
Ben Martin, for sharing this with all of us. So wishing you and yours a very blessed Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Kim. It was my honor to do this.
And our quote for today is from Abraham Lincoln. He says, "Sir, my concern is not whether God is on our side. My greatest concern is to be on God's side, for God is always right." My friends, today be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.